This is a Deese World production in association with Pants Pending Studios.
Is this just a situation where you're going to cut a bunch of our blurbs out of context?
No, because then there would be blisters in awkward places, which would be terrible.
Oh, here we go. That is the dirtiest thing I've ever seen.
Listen to The Nerd with Adam, Will, and Amanda.
Why did I get top billing? I don't deserve top billing.
Because out of the two of us, you're the one she likes better.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
I'm 8 months pregnant. Put another one in me.
And that's when she figured out that I had taken drugs.
How are all of you? We're going to do a promo, but we're just going to talk sex.
I got to see your dick.
Aw, man. I mean, yeah.
She cooked dinner for me in lingerie, which hopefully she doesn't listen to this, because I don't know if I'm supposed to say that.
This podcast phenomenon is sweeping the nation, and we're all up on the bandwagon with the plethora of episodes at nerd.pantspending.com.
Willem Dafoe gives me a lady boner.
Blue Chew is bullshit, by the way.
Listen to The Nerd. It's not the worst thing that can happen to you. Is that a good no? It takes effort to do a promo.
Yeah.
And I think we knew that before.
Although I feel like we could just put that part in.
Yeah.
That along with the nerdy thing Adam said and me with the sexy voice. There you go. There's your promo, Will. Congratulations.
The Nerd. I'm sorry.
You're now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
So cleaning up blood off cement's a nightmare. No wonder people get caught for murders.
Get ready for the social hour.
This is The Social Hour. On today's show, comedian Eric Escobar. And now your host. He's just trying to live that endless summer, which is really easy because he's unemployed. Deese Casillas.
Malam Keen, everyone. Welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I am Deese. Thanks for coming around for another episode. We appreciate you hanging out, guys. As you guys know by now, we're on our Tuesday, Thursday schedule. No more Wednesdays. We're coming to you twice a week. You can still find us on the Pants Pending Podcast Studio Network, along with all the shows, Never Any Random Discussion, Burr Martin Experience, and the newest Trading Pages, as well as some others coming soon. If you like what you hear on our show or any of the other ones, go to Patreon.com/PantsPending. You can do a one-time donation or subscribe. Get some behind-the-scenes content from across the network, some special exclusive stuff just for our little special Devachkas giving us some extra cash. We appreciate it, guys. But as always, this show free. Thanks for listening and hanging out. This week, we have a special guest coming all the way from, I assume, Los Angeles, because that's where we live, but I could be wrong. Comedian Eric Escobar, my buddy. How you doing, man?
Hello, all the way from Los Angeles, New Mexico. So excited.
Are you
to
in
be a
New
part.
Mexico?
No, I'm not.
So are you in Los Angeles or New Mexico? I started saying Los Angeles, and I'm like, that's where he lives, but he could have gone somewhere else. So
I'm actually in the same room as Deese right now, but we want to make this real classy, so we're trying to pull the Hollywood card.
Yeah, we're he's in Thailand. I'm in Italy. We're just in vacation, enjoying our quarantine. Suckers.
If you've never been to Los Angeles, Thailand, it really is my favorite Los Angeles of all the Los Angeles.
Right.
It's the best.
I know. Is there a little Thailand? There's not a little Thailand in Los Angeles, huh? There's a little China.
We have a Thai town.
Is there a Thai town? Where is Thai town? I grew up in LA. I was just there like a month or two ago. Where is Thai town?
You know what? I don't know exactly where it is. I know it's off the 101 because I always see the Thai Town sign and I'm like, look, it's Thai Town. But all my life, I've never been there. I assume it's just a several restaurants just in one block.
Right. They just that's like I probably no one's been there. I don't know if anyone who's been there. I know everyone who's been to, you know, Alvaro Street. Or Boyle Heights, East LA, or you've been to, everyone's been to Chinatown and stuff, but who's been to, there's like Little Saigon and stuff in like Garden Grove, Orange County, yeah. Like all the, where all the Koreans and Vietnamese are, there's like Little Korea and stuff like that, but I don't, I didn't know.
I don't know what really qualifies, like, we have Filipino Town, but it really is like not even very Filipino in Filipino Town.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder if Thai Town is just like one Thai family who's like, right. Hey, this is our place. And it's established. They claim territory. It's fine.
Well, up in like, up in, where like North Hollywood, like San Fernando Valley, and like the, there's this place called the Donnas, which is all the, this kind of up in the hills. They used to call it Hebrew Heights because that's where all the Jewish
that's
people.
That's a cool name.
Yeah,
it sounds like a great like hardcore band from the 90s. Right, Hebrew right, Heights. Yeah. Like, we're gonna see them at Coachella next year. I promise.
Some indie band out of Seattle, Hebrew Heights. It was like a that was like a failed sitcom from Fox from 1992, Hebrew Heights. It didn't do very well. So how's life in LA treating you, man? I mean, I know you've been you were doing comedy. You were always busy, and that came to a screeching halt for all of us around mid late March. You know,
amen.
And yeah, it I thought I saw some light at the end of the tunnel here in Washington. We had some stuff kind of moving. And then a couple days ago, Governor Inslee put a moratorium on all live entertainment for the next, you know, indefinitely,
no.
Basically. Yeah. So
I've heard like Seattle has been hit really hard. Like nothing can happen, at least on the west side of Washington. And I was like, oh, I'm really curious if that's affecting just like that big city or if it's everywhere.
Yeah.
But I guess you just answered it. Like, I guess it's just everywhere. It's being super lame.
Yeah. Well, part of the problem is Spokane is, you know, you've been here. It's a second biggest city in Washington state, but it's a very small town mentality. You know, it's on the
yes.
complete opposite side of the state of Washington than Seattle is. And the people here, you know, more conservative, closer to North Idaho makes, you know, their heads more. And they're like, oh, it's a hoax. It's a Democratic hoax. Or, you know, I got my freedom to wear my gun and no mask. It's like, all right, dude, well, that's fine. But now, you know, you get to go fishing, but now everyone has COVID. So, like, what?
Here's the thing. I feel like when I used to go on the road, I was a big barbecue guy. I love barbecue.
Okay,
if there
yeah.
was a town that had good barbecue, I was going to get that good barbecue. And years ago, probably like 5-6 years ago, I went to Spokane and my buddy Matt Dargan was over there and he was like, you know what? You got to go to Chicken Mo. Chicken Mo is so great.
Sure, yeah.
So we went to Chicken Mo. We had some fried chicken. We had some barbecue. And I was like, this is great. Are there any other barbecue places in the state? And then he was like, no, I think these are the only black people in Spokane. And I was like, oh, okay, I'm pretty sure.
I mean,
this is my barbecue fix and I'm getting no more barbecue for the rest of the time I'm here.
Yeah, that's base. He's not necessarily wrong. There's like, you know, I mean, during the football season, there's a couple of guys that play for Eastern.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
Shipped in from Minnesota.
Right. Yeah, they're from somewhere else and they're gone for the summer. Yeah, I have a joke I do in my set about how Spokane. Or do you know who Rachel Dolezal is?
You know what? I do, and I have a question for you that you may or may not answer in this story.
Sure,
go
sure.
for it.
Okay, at least you know who she is. So the I have a joke where like I'm like Spokane, we're home to, you know, Hoofest. The biggest 3-on-3 basketball tournament in the entire world. And then the rest of the year, you can't find three black people in the same place at the same time. Like the most famous black person from Spokane is Rachel Dolezal. Like you got to step your game up, people. What are you doing? You know, like that's their most famous black person. She's a white girl from Montana. So
jeez, Louise. I remember when that whole Rachel Dolezal thing came out. I thought it was a bit. I thought it was like an Onion article or I thought it was like, just not real. And then it was real. And I'm like, you know what? I've been to Spokane. I love Spokane. And this seems very accurate.
It's pretty on brand accurate. For Spokane. You know, I actually, funny story. I actually dated that girl for a while.
That's what I was going to ask. And I was like, this is your podcast. I don't know if I should be bringing stuff up.
That's all right.
I was like, did you? Yeah, I remember you had a bit about that.
Yeah.
This was a while back, like at least 3-4 years ago.
Yeah. I used to. So like, we never were like together. We dated off and on pretty casually, but this was like long before she was, this was 8 years ago, 7 years ago. So like it was before she wasn't even claiming to be black at the time, or at least not to me. And it was obvious she wasn't to me. She would told me the story about, I mean, she was teaching, like race relations stuff, doing a bunch of stuff. She was an artist at the time. And, yeah, we got into it when I called her out because she was being racist against Chinese people. And I'm like, I thought we were for equality. What happened? You know, she's like, well, we all stick to our people. I'm like, who's your people? You're white, lady. I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, not that you can't stick up for black people or anything, but like, you know, why are you being like, racist towards Chinese people right now when you like rally for black people? But and now I'm like, oh, you're so confusing. Yeah.
Yeah, that seems very stressful. Well, you know what? Power to you for dating a black woman.
Yeah.
I feel like, thank you for having an open mind about that.
Right. Yeah. So you guys can stop saying I hate black people now. I used to have a bit about that too, but I stopped doing it because people were too sensitive. I would be like, there's three things in my life. Like I once got in a fight with Joey Fatone. There was something else.
Ooh.
And I'm like, I used to date Rachel Dolezal. So you guys can stop saying I don't like black people. And like, people didn't get it. And I'm like, all right, never mind. You don't understand. Like, this is like, I don't actually not like black people, and she's not black. So like, fucking.
But, is she still Spokaneing? Is she still like doing stuff in the area, or is she moved? Is she just like no longer part of that area?
She stays pretty low key, but she's still around. She still lives in the area.
Okay.
She got busted for in trouble
meth.
For kind of a lateral move. not far off, she got busted for welfare fraud.
Oh, that is not a good thing when you're that is not, there's a lot of things that are not good about this situation.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan.
So, I mean, it was, she's in, she's still around. I know who works at a coffee shop served her a while back and, said she was just a raging bitch. I can imagine your whole world crumbles and you're just, I mean, she's already angry and kind of a, obviously a fraud.
She's looking for a reason.
Right.
You can tell.
Yeah. So it's very, I mean, I can imagine it's got to be a difficult life to still live in this area. You're infamous forever. I mean, and she still can't admit that she's white. She, people like, are you?
Oh my
and she's
God.
Like, she's like, I consider myself culturally black or whatever. You're like, oh, lady, just what is happening right now?
Oh man. I feel the weirdest thing about this whole situation is of all places, Spokane is like the one place where I'm like, it wouldn't happen out there. Spokaneites are pretty cool people. They're chill. They're level headed.
Right.
But this, and it's like the worst place for it to happen because it's like, ugh.
Oh yeah. Well,
I don't know.
She was from Montana and lived in Coeur d'Alene for a long time. And then she got a job at Eastern. And then she kind of moved into Spokane, I guess. And then it blew up. But I mean, how long can you really keep that? I mean, you've seen the pictures of her as a kid, right?
It depends how much money you have saved up for Tanner. Bronzer.
Well, she's got like these pictures on her Instagram where her hair is all curly. She's like, frizzy and stuff. She's like, just going natural today. I'm like, bitch, that is not natural for you.
Jeez,
like,
you
got to get your perm out. You're perming that thing like just to get it like that. I mean, talk about, if you want to talk about cultural appropriation or offensive, it's like, holy shit.
Oh my God. You know what? I feel like she was hot for a minute. Now she's not. And I feel like we shouldn't even
give her
glorify or give her the time to even think about her. we've also just done 10 minutes.
Yeah,
on,
we'll move so on. Kind of let's, well, yeah, we'll move on from that. Rachel Dolezal.
Anyways, I identify as Chinese now. Just okay, so you didn't know. No, I'm kidding.
You can write a strong, a sternly worded letter to Miss Dolezal. I actually reached out to her after that happened, and like I stole her number. I tried to text her and see if she'd come on the show. She didn't. She declined. but I tried. I tried for my faithful listeners. So
I appreciate your efforts. If no one else does, I do.
So how's it been going down there in California though? I mean, you're like I said, you guys are kind of in the same boat we are. I know your governor Newsom recently passed down kind of similar. He's closing all bars again, all restaurants, yes. And so I mean, you guys had a moment of freedom. I hope you savored it.
So here's the thing. My birthday was March 16, and on March 16, I went to the last open bar in San Diego County, and I was like, this is it.
Yeah.
I'm not going to go to a bar for forever, and this is going to suck. But I had full faith that if we were good, it would be done by, like, late April, May.
Right.
I was like, you know what? As long as we're done by, like, late April, it's fine. And now we've basically gotten reset back to zero. So
yeah.
It sucks. It sucks a lot. I was actually low-key, Deese. I was loving quarantine for
right.
the first, like, month and a half.
Yeah.
It was the best. Like, I was making more money I've ever made on unemployment. I don't have to talk to people. I don't have to interact with people.
Yeah.
I can just sit at home like video games. It was the best. But I would definitely say it's hard right now. It's hard because you're bored. It's hard because you miss comedy. It's hard because you look at other states, and other
right.
states are opening clubs and opening venues, and we're like doing Zoom shows
right.
and like maybe if we want to be a little crazy, do an open mic in a park.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like
right.
it's really, it's tough times right now. It's weird. It's super weird.
Yeah. It's one of those things where, I mean, as a comic too, you're just used to being, you know, if you're an active comic, you're out either at an open mic or probably, or at getting paid for a show, probably 5 to 7 nights a week sometimes. I mean, you're
yeah.
if you're not getting paid to do a gig, you're usually working out or doing something comedy related. You're used to being around people out traveling. I mean, I loved quarantine at first too. I mean, I still am loving it in different ways, but I loved it because
yeah.
it was a break I needed. I'd just been going too hard for too long. But yeah, I mean, it really that immediate pump, the like just hitting the brakes of, oh, well, like what? Now, I mean, everything I was spending all my time on is gone. And like, and then, you know, now looking at it, like, when do we get to do it again? Is it, I mean, it could be
yeah.
6 months to a year. I mean, potentially, I mean, who knows? You know, I mean, stand up at some, in some way, but it, you know, the way it was before where, you know, you can get a sold out packed room and be within 6 feet of each other. That may be year or more even, you know, until we have a vaccine and stuff. So
don't say that,
man.
You're right. But don't put that juju out there. I'm saying hopeful. I am. Here's the thing. I lost, and I'm not trying to complain or like be like moping or anything, but I lost probably like $2,000 or $3,000 worth of work.
Oh yeah.
Like that. Cause COVID started right in the middle of me being on the road for about 3 months. So about a month in,
damn. Yeah,
everything just ended for March, April, May. It was really horrible. I had a TV show that
yeah.
we were going to shoot.
Jesus.
It was a primetime NBC show that just fell off. Luckily, I just heard back that we're like starting the process again of like possibly trying to shoot,
yeah.
which is really exciting. But it's crazy because like you said, I think when you're in the game of stand-up or just in the game of comedy, you really have to just be on all the time. Make
yeah.
sure you respond to every email, reaching out every day, trying to get these dates every day. And when everything stops and you're forced to just take a breath, oh boy, is that a beautiful breath. It is the best breath.
Yeah.
And even though a lot has been lost and like, you know, hopefully those shows like reschedule and stuff, it's so scary because like I have a big run set up for September, October.
Yeah.
And I'm just basically trying to be like, if everyone is good, this can happen.
Right.
If it's not, we're going to have to reschedule to 2023 and I'm screwed.
Yeah. And
you
who
know
knows?
I mean,
yeah, who knows? That's it's out of your hands. It's not like a thing where, hey, all I have to do is do this one thing and it's fine. You know, it's not like you have a to-do list and then you can make sure this gets taken care of. Like usually when you're planning stuff, There's so many other factors, and it includes another 3.5 billion people that live in this fucking
country. Yeah. You know, well, so. Here's the thing that I think people, they may not realize this about like planning out comedy runs, but it's not like, oh, one producer booked me for these 3 weeks worth of shows.
Right. Yeah.
It really is.
Yeah.
I can score a weekend here, and then on that Monday I can go here, and on Tuesday there's a one-nighter, and then there's like a casino that can hook me up on that Thursday. So I'm gonna try to see if I can get that Thursday.
Yeah.
And then if I can get the next weekend, then that'll be perfect because I can have two weekends and have things bridge between. So there's a lot of moving parts.
Oh,
and
yeah.
There's a lot of things where you're like, if one thing messes up, I'm kind of screwed.
Right.
And that's what comics do.
Well,
we,
yeah.
Like, we try to fill in the gaps. And now we're like, if we don't know.
It's all a gap now. The whole fucking the whole calendar is a gap.
Oh, man. That's true. And that hurts very much. It is a very angry feeling in my heart.
You know
how true that is.
It's rough. I know. I mean, we got to do one show. I snuck one show in. We weren't supposed to do it, but I do a show at my buddy's bar every month during Pride Month for Pride. Uh-huh. He's like, hey, you want to do this show still? And I'm like, fucking yeah, let's do it. I don't give a shit. I'm down. The worst liquor control board can do is come in and tell us to stop during the show. Like, they can't find us 100%. Or anything, so whatever. So we did it, and it was fun. It's great to be back on stage. I didn't really feel the ring rust like I was afraid I would. You know, it's one of those things, I think it's more in your head. But you know, once
it's riding a bike, it really is riding a bike. Once you can do it, you might be rusty, but you can still do it.
Yeah. Like there were a couple little tags and a couple like things. I kind of like, I forgot to say that line or this and that. But I mean, again, like the audience doesn't know, they don't know what you forgot to say, you know, they just know,
exactly.
What, you know, so it's like, but, you know, I mean, I haven't done any Zoom shows. Have you, I was asked to do a couple. I declined,
Ooh, they are an experience, brother.
Man.
I'm not saying they're good. But they are unexperienced, 100%.
So are you doing like are you doing stand-up Zoom shows, or is it like a variety show type thing? I did one Zoom show that was like a more of an improv show, interactive with the audience.
For sure.
And that I was into. But yeah, the stand-up, I've watched a couple people do that. And that seems real rough.
So here's the thing. To be honest, tonight is the first night since, I'm going to say March, I don't know, mid-March, that I haven't done a Zoom show.
Really?
Like, I'm really stoked to have been able to do this, but I've been able to get something every night.
Oh, nice.
Like, I would say the majority of shows, and hopefully I can get like two a night. Usually it's just one. If I can't get anything, I'll do a Zoom mic. But it's honestly like a different muscle.
Yeah.
It is a very different muscle. And I will say, when I did that live show, I did a live show in a park. And it was crazy because you could really tell the people who've been off for 3 months.
Sure.
And the people who've been just doing Zoom shows.
Yeah.
Because it's crazy. The people who've been off for 3 months, they're a little rusty. But the people doing Zoom shows are blasting through their material.
Sure.
Because on Zoom shows, you don't have to worry about laughs.
You just go.
Everyone is making spaghetti. Everyone's muted. Everyone's doing something else. So it's crazy because you really just kind of just do your material for no one. You might get a laugh here and there if they're unmuted. But it's such a different muscle. It really is. Like, I feel like when you do a Zoom show, it's really exciting because you get to like try out new things and see if things work. But also, it's in no way comparable to what it's like live and how you work a crowd in that sense.
Yeah, it seems like an interesting, you know, I had a couple, I feel like when I was being approached for them, I was still enjoying the quarantine too much. And I was like, I'm
fair
good.
Enough.
I'm like, I don't want to. And then, I don't know, like the first few months, I was just really enjoying the time off. Then when I started, plus I started doing other things. Like, I started doing the podcast more. I launched like a comedy news show I do every week, and like doing more sketch comedy. So I kind of pivoted to like other forms that has kept me busy. And you know, like that's actually like sketch comedy, like writing and filming is actually probably I enjoy more than stand up even. So like, I'm like, I don't know, you know, if I'm going to make some to no money at it, I'll do the things I enjoy. And like, you know,
I think instinctually as artists, we just want to stay busy and creative.
Yeah.
And yeah. I feel like it doesn't matter if you're doing Zoom shows, if you're doing sketch stuff, if you're just writing, if you're whatever you're doing. I think right now, all we need, like you, me, every other comic, every artist, we just need to stay kind of like busy and yeah. doing something that like fuels creativity. And right now, I don't care what that is. I just want to make sure I'm like busy and like able to like do my art.
Right.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So it's kind of crazy because I think a lot of people during this weird lockdown, they've like found new hobbies. They sure. found new ways to create content. And I'm all for it. I'm just like, as long as we're all like happy and not like crying because we're so bored and like in a weird state, do it. Yeah. I don't give a fuck what you yeah. write poetry, read right. a book. I don't, it's as long as you're okay. As long as we're all okay, I'm chilling.
Yeah, man. That's what it, I mean, really, we all have that kind of creative angst where you got to get it out somehow. And, yeah. you know, it's tough. How have you felt the Zoom shows have gone? Like, are you getting new content? Are you writing new material? Is it stuff that's like, do you think it's going to stick long term? Or is it kind of like, it's material that works now because of kind of, it being via Zoom like this or like and because of the moment or is it stuff that, you know, may stick around long term?
So to be perfectly honest, I feel like a lot of my bits that I used to do, it was very much like I would have a bit and I would have a punchline, but I wouldn't just do my joke. I would like do crowd work and talk to people yeah. and I would work up to that joke. So if I had a joke about tattoos, I would be like, who's got a weird tattoo? And that might be 5 minutes on its own before I actually get to the bit.
Yeah,
you know what
yeah,
I mean?
Sure.
So it's weird because in these Zoom shows, you can't do that.
Yeah.
So before, I would say like my like half hour is really like 7 minutes right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because right. I'm like, you can't really talk to people and interact like the way you do in a live show.
Yeah.
So I definitely have like COVID material and pandemic material that I think is going to be great for the next 3 months.
Yeah.
Hopefully 2 weeks, yeah, you know what I mean? Right, like, yeah. hopefully not for long. But it's just weird because the stuff I'm coming up with, I'm like, it's only so evergreen and it's not going to work for a while.
Right.
And a lot of the stuff that I usually do is so crowd work heavy and so like interaction heavy that I think all my time has just been shrunk.
Yeah.
So it really is like a new way of approaching comedy for me. And it really is like a new way of like structuring my set and like doing things just because I can't rely on like talking to people, you know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's have you done any Zoom shows where you can hear the audience or anything? I know a couple of people have said they've tried that where they unmute a couple people so they can get some feedback audibly. I mean, have you done anything like that?
I've done it, but it's also like in a show where if you're lucky to have 30 people tuning in,
yeah,
maybe 3 of them are gonna unmute.
Sure.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So like they'll do it. I think the biggest Zoom show I did was like 100. And even in that like 100 person show, only like maybe 5 to 10 were unmuted and like having a good time.
Yeah.
Audibly.
Sure.
So it's like, this is cool. I'm going to keep going. all right. Thank you. Thank you. Please book me again. I've
sure. Yeah. Let people know you liked me. Did you, so with the stand up, how have you been doing it? Cause I've seen it a couple different ways. I've seen some people, you know, standing in their living room and they actually do, you know, the mic stand and a mic and like talking to a mic that isn't actually plugged in. And I've seen some people like kind of sitting like you're sitting now, like just kind of sitting at their desk and telling jokes to the audience that way. What's your method been?
I do it sitting down.
Yeah.
Only because, and this is no disrespect to any comics, they can do whatever they want to do. But I feel like when your virtual background is a brick wall and you're standing up with a microphone, it feels too much.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it just feels like you're trying real hard. And at the end of the day, like we're telling our jokes, but we're really just trying to connect. And I feel like it's a lot more disarming when I'm like, I'm just one of you. I'm like sitting on my couch. I'm in right here. Let's just like talk.
Yeah.
Than it is to be like, hello, I'm a comedian. I'm trying to bring back the real life when the real life isn't coming back.
Right. It's yeah, we don't. That's probably a good point. Well, let's talk about you a little bit more specifically. The audience may or may not know you out there. You're a comedian. You've been doing it for, you know, quite some time. Let's get some background on you specifically. How long have
let's
you been
do
doing
it.
Comedy for?
I did a mic in 2008. I did a mic in 2010 and I got serious in 2012.
Okay. What was the big gaps in between 2 year gaps in between doing comedy?
2008, I was 18 and okay. I Googled open mic comedy clubs and the first thing that came up was the Laugh Factory, which okay. is like the biggest club out here.
Yeah.
And it was a 2 minute mic and it wasn't even a mic. It was really an audition to like get work at the club. And I remember I did it and I bombed super hard and I was like, I don't want to do this ever again.
Sure.
And then I was doing a lot of improv at the time. So I was still like doing comedy in some type of way. And I remember I was an RA in college. And when I was an RA, I had this resident. His name was Alex Davenport. He was going to school at Cal State LA. We went to school together. And he moved from Idaho to LA to do comedy. But he used going to school as kind of like the reason
sure.
why he came out here.
Yeah.
So we talked about comedy a lot. We both loved stand-up. We both loved improv. So we were talking about it. And he was like, oh, there's this really cool thing that we should do. It's like a stand-up thing. Do you want to do it? And I'm like, yeah, sure. Let's do it. So we take a bus from East LA to Hollywood on a Thursday. And that's when he tells me the show isn't until Sunday because he actually took me to the last Comic Standing auditions.
Oh, wow.
So I had no material, nothing prepared. Jesus. I remember, this is a kind of crazy story, because I went up and I did my thing and they were like, we don't like you. You can go away. And I'm like, oh, thanks.
Thanks.
Fair enough. And then a producer came running after me and he was like, oh, they want to see you again. So I'm like, oh, okay. So when I initially did it, I was doing jokes about being Mexican, Filipino, a lot of things about my race.
Yeah.
And when they brought me back up, they were like, hey, we want to hear more about you being Filipino and Mexican. Do you have any of your jokes on it? I stumbled my way through a couple quick bits.
Yeah.
Nothing good. I left. They still didn't like me. I watched the season premiere and Greg Giraldo comes on the screen and he's like, you know what I hate? I hate comics who just do hacky racist jokes about their race. And it immediately cuts to me when they ask me to come back and do more racial material. And I'm like, this sucks. I hate everything about this. And then I didn't do comedy for like a year and a half after that. And then in 2012, I took a stand-up class with an amazing comedian, Tom Clark. And I really was like, I'm about to graduate college. Yeah. I can get a real job or do something I really want to do. I'm going to do comedy. And I just yeah. never looked back. And I started doing comedy kind of like all guns a-blazing then.
Full ahead, huh? So you're from LA, is that right?
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like everyone I know from LA moved away.
Yeah.
I stayed here and I'm so grateful I did. There's just a lot of opportunities out here I feel like a lot of people are trying to get to LA
yeah.
and I'm already here. So I like don't want to, I want to take advantage of that.
Yeah, yeah, here. Definitely. No, I mean, it seems like the place, I mean, you know, LA, New York, Chicago, it seems like the places, you know, people try to get to if they're doing comedy.
Exactly.
I mean, there was countless opportunities all around.
Was is the beautiful word in that sentence.
So, I mean, once you started taking it seriously, what was the path then? I mean, do you have a club you worked out at regularly or open mics you were hitting regularly? What was the scene like for you, you know, getting to the point where you were working regularly?
I think it really was. It's a lot like the rest of us. Like, I think I heard about a couple bar shows and I would like go and talk to the producer and they would put me on. And then after I do their shows and other comics in the lineup is like, oh, I run a show. Do you want to do that show?
Yeah.
And then I would do that show. And then I realized like, oh, there's a lot of shows. So I would just like send emails or send at the time, like Facebook messages or even like MySpace messages
right, yeah.
to people and just be like, hey, I do comedy. Can I do comedy with you?
Yeah.
And after you do that for a while, you really start to understand like, oh, these are the shows that like require you to bring people and they're a little harder to get. So I'm not going to do those. Oh, here are the easier shows to get on. Let me do those shows. And eventually, next thing you know, you're doing comedy, like you said, 5 to 10 times a week. And
yeah.
you're just kind of like, all right, I'm in this and I can't let this momentum stop.
Yeah, you just keep going. And so since 2012, basically, you've been pretty much going pretty hard. What year is it? 2020? Okay, yeah. All right, that's math.
About 8 years.
Yeah, about 8 years.
Give or take.
Wow, yeah. So what's one of your favorite places? I mean, you've been all over across America. What's your favorite place you've done comedy at?
You know, Adis, I'm not just saying this because you're a local to it. I love Pullman, Washington.
Oh, Etsy
Pullman,
Bravo.
Pullman, Washington.
Yeah,
shout Etsy out. Etsy Bravo. So I remember this is probably about 5-6 years back. Me and some friends got together and we started this thing called the Almost Asian Comedy Tour.
Yeah.
Because we were all half Asian. So we started to like do this thing where we go to different places and just like do these shows.
Right.
And our first big run, we were trying to get booked in, I think we were trying to get booked in Coeur d'Alene.
Okay.
Or not Coeur d'Alene. It might have been Coeur d'Alene. It was somewhere on the eastern Washington, western Idaho border.
Sure, like around the, yeah, ancillary to Spokane area. You know.
Yeah. Or actually, what's the big college out there? Is it U of I? University of Idaho?
In Idaho? In Coeur d'Alene? Yeah. Yeah, University of Idaho is in Coeur d'Alene. Yeah.
Word. So I think we hit up University of Idaho and we're like, hey, U of I, if you have an improv team or a comedy group, if there's any opportunity to perform there, we want to do it.
Yeah.
And then U of I was like, actually, no, we don't have anything really like that. But here's a guy who did comedy here that you might want to hit up. So I hit up this individual and he's like, I'm actually living in Seattle right now, but I'm from Pullman and I know a cool bar if you want to hit up Etsy Bravo. So I actually hit up Etsy Bravo and we did the first ever stand-up show there.
Okay.
And it was crazy because now they're doing stand-up all the time. And it's like super awesome because like I feel like I go there and it's like I'm coming home.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like we kind of like made this happen here. We started doing live comedy here. And now it's like a thing here. And it's so exciting and it's so fun. And I'm like so stoked every time I go there. I'll do a whole run in the Northwest. And like my big like exciting, like, I can't wait till we do this moment is when we get to Etsy Bravo.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Etsy Bravo, it's for people who don't know, is in Pullman, Washington, where Washington State University is. Shout out to Corey and Blake, the owners. They just recently had a little baby girl, too.
She's so cute.
Yeah.
She's a cute baby.
So shout out to them. Yeah, that is actually one of my, someone asked me that question a while back, too, and my answer was Etsy Bravo also. I love that place. I think I've gotten to perform there about five or six times. And it's just great. The audience is great. Again, Corey and Blake are great. And the crowds that come out are always super awesome, very supportive, and just want to have a great time.
So quick thing about Corey and Blake, though. They are big fans of a liquor called Fernet Branca.
Uh-huh.
Have you ever had Fernet Branca?
Yes, yeah.
It's great. But as you know, having tried it, it's super weird.
It is.
It's not a lot for me. It's not. But I'm going to show it off right now. I actually have a Fernet tattoo on my knee. I don't know if you can see it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
But it's of the logo. And I'm a big Fernet guy. And I found out Corey and Blake are big Fernet people. So every time I do a show there, they break out a bottle of Fernet and they break out like little sparklers and fireworks. And we just drink Fernet until they close. And I'm like, you know what? As soon as I found out you guys had the same favorite alcohol as I do, we're going to be friends.
Yeah,
for life.
Game
you guys
over.
Are the best people
gonna
ever.
Happen. Yeah, that's great. No, it is. And that's kind of one of the nice things about that is one of the things I miss about doing comedy is seeing those people regularly, like,
the hang of comedy,
but also meeting new people though. I mean, like I really enjoyed, you know, going around to new places and, you know, you'd meet new best friends for a night, man. You'd meet some really interesting
really
people and that's kind of gone, obviously gone away. And I think that's another thing that, like, you know, it's a weird thing for comics, man. It's a weird withdrawal for a lot of reasons that I think they don't, you know, people aren't necessarily understanding how many aspects and moving pieces there are for us.
I think comics are, and I don't want to speak for every comedian on the face of the earth, but I think typically, like, people will be surprised how many, like, introverts there are in comedy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we're really kind of, like, awkward people a lot of the time. We have friends, but you know what I mean? Like we're awkward people.
Yeah.
And when you do a show and a group of people or some guy or some random person buys you a shot as a way to be like, hey, I want to like hang out with you for a minute. And they become, like you said, your best friend for the night.
Right.
It's such a beautiful feeling. And not having that for 3 months has been super weird.
Right. Yeah. It's just, it's a piece that you're so used to. And when it goes away so instantly, you know, and without being able to prepare for it, you know, like you said, yeah, you know, I mean, you probably had shows the weekend coming up, you know, that were, and then they're like instantly just gone. You're like, oh
yeah.
And you're like, well, maybe, you know, and maybe next week. And then it's like, no, not next week, not next month, not in a couple months. And it just keeps going. So have you,
I remember I actually did a show that you were running over at, was it the Riddler?
Yeah, the piano bar. Yep. Yeah.
I'm writing a show there, and there was a comic, I think, from like Arizona who drove in to like do the show. It was crazy. They like, they weren't on a run.
He or she? Like, was it a he or she?
It was a he. I forgot his name, but he drove super far to do it. We did the show together.
Yeah.
And afterwards, we hung out for like 4 hours.
Jeez.
We were just drinking and talking. It was amazing. And I was like, what other job do you have where you get to meet someone who's just like coming up for a night from 15 hours away and you get to just like hang forever and like nerd out about over weird stuff. And then like, that's that. And you'll see them when you see them.
Right.
It's such a cool part of the job. I love it.
Yeah. That whole networking thing. And really it's like, it is an odd fraternity that very few people get to, you know, actually really embrace. I feel bad actually sometimes when I'm doing comedy stuff where I have like my comedy friends around and then like my regular friend people are around, and it's just, it's like a weird mix to, it's do you find that odd? Like you don't know how to interact with both, both people at the same time, you know?
Well, I think when you, here's the thing. I think when comics get together, you're really playing like a game with each other. You know what I mean? You're like doing bits with each other.
Yeah.
You're like doing jokes with each other. And it's something that you can't really do with civilians.
Right.
So when your civilian friends are brought into like a joining of the worlds conversation, it's like, I don't know how many weird bits I should do or how dark I can get, because you know me as a normal person,
right?
But I can get weird with these guys. I'm gonna get weird with these guys, but you're here, so are we okay? Is everyone okay?
Right. Yeah. It's I try not to mix, you know. You can't cross the streams. It's like Ghostbusters, man.
You,
so you just can't do it. Every now and then it works, but very, very rarely. So,
yeah.
Is there anything you kind of rediscovered during COVID that you found that you used to do that you, you know, forgot about and you're like, oh yeah, I like the, you know, this is, it turns out.
That's a crazy question. So here's the thing. I think me, like probably a lot of us, have horrible ADD.
Yeah.
I've had horrible ADHD my whole life. And I didn't realize until this quarantine, I'm pretty sure up until probably a year ago, I didn't really know how to read.
I never learned to read.
I feel like every time I would read a book, I would kind of grasp what's going on, but I would get so distracted.
Yeah.
Or I would think about other things. And next thing you know, I'm like 3 pages in and I'm like, oh, I have to go back.
Right.
Because I had to like, I didn't grasp anything.
I didn't absorb any of that. I just, you know, words were going by.
Exactly. And I was just like doing my own thing, thinking about like, what am I going to have for lunch? What are they doing? What's happening here? I've been reading a lot this quarantine. And that's something that I feel like I haven't gotten to enjoy my life.
Yeah.
Because I never really like could pay attention good enough. But now I'm like in a place in my life where I can like focus a little more just because of life. So it's crazy. I've been learning to like re-enjoy reading, which I really, I'm grateful for.
Yeah.
It's fun.
Yeah. What are you reading?
I'm going through the whole Harry Potter series right now.
Really? Okay. All right.
I just finished one. I'm on a Goblet of Fire, not Goblet of Fire. I'm on Chamber of Secrets right now.
All right.
I was reading that before this wonderful podcast. Yeah, I'm just trying to read more. I think it's so cool because like, when you're watching a TV show or watching Netflix or whatever it is, you can be distracted by your phone. You can tune out a minute because you're like cooking or whatever,
yeah,
or, like doing whatever. But with reading, you really have to sit down and like hyper focus into it.
Sure.
And it's a really beautiful form of entertainment. I've really been enjoying it.
That's great. I've been reading more too, but it is something I definitely lost also. I think a lot of people do because like you said, like everything else is so quick and so fast in social media. Whereas, you know, you really have to kind of stick in and have nothing else going on with reading.
Yeah.
It's funny. You say Harry Potter. I was, I go for a lot of bike rides, and when I'm riding my bike,
I've just been biking too. Yeah. Let's talk about it.
That's my favorite thing is I go for bike rides, and I put on my Cuban jazz channel on Pandora, which is like the weirdest, like, I don't know why Cuban jazz. I found it like forever ago and I love it. I just listened.
I'm slowly getting into bossa nova, so okay. I feel you.
Yeah, yeah.
That type of vibe, it's calming and it's fun.
It's great for you being in LA. It's great because like the architecture, the landscape matches, and like the sun. Like for me, it's all about the sun and the vibe. It like gives you this like Amen. Really like you know. But I was thinking for some reason I was thinking about Harry Potter, and I decided I want to write a sketch or like some sort of show.